comment. I just want to check that we have sound going in. That looks good.
Now it is my pleasure to hand the mic. I would like to welcome and thank you for joining us today at AU Central, and for those of you who have joined us via Illuminate Live. Now it is my pleasure to hand the microphone over to Dr. Federico, who will continue with today's presentation.
Thank you very much. Welcome everybody, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to present this to you today. First of all, I'd like to say that I'm very pleased with this introduction, and it's the process of being around because I'm not a doctor yet, so something happened on the way of this email or something. But anyway, I'm a PhD candidate who is at the moment in a pre-doctoral state, as we would say, as a visiting scholar at Basel University, thanks to an invitation by the Center for Business Education. I'm a professor of English, an online professor of English at the Universitat Oberta de Catalunya, which is based in Barcelona. And I'm very glad to be at an online university and then coming to another online university to finish my dissertation. And part of my work on this, on my dissertation is what I'm going to present to you today. I'm going to, for the first time ever in public, I'm going to present the role of the online learner. And after this presentation, I'm going to embark on a kind of proselytist mission around the world on various conferences to present and to disseminate, the next one being in May, the CNIB conference in Brunswick, in St. John, I think it is. So, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the change in roles, then the theory on the role of the online learner as I see it. I'll explain the role as I see it, as I understand it, and we'll see the most important competencies in the role. And if we have time, I'd like to show you a real instance of training students on the role of the online learner. The context for this role of the online learner is this proposed theory is my PhD. Doctoral research, my dissertation research, and I'm sorry about the graphic because it's kind of blurry. Anyway, I'll explain to you. This is the extension one to sprint it actually. this is the research design, and this is the context for the role of the online learner, as I'm going to tell you later. For a number of degrees in my university, I chose one subject where there were at least two classrooms, classroom one, classroom two, top left. Classroom one in all subjects was the tutorial group or the treatment group, which would be exposed to some things that the control group, classroom two, would not. So this is a kind of quasi experiment. Both groups were passed a pre-treatment questionnaire. Then all groups for classroom one in all the degrees were given access to the tutorial on the role of the online learner that you see at the end of the day. While classroom two in these subjects were not exposed, were not given access to this tutorial. Anyway, every student, or all students were passed, were given access to this post-treatment questionnaire. And after that, there are connection lines there, but they can't be seen on the screen probably, but in the graphic view you can see it later. There were two focus groups, one tutorial, one control as well, a number of questions as well, and then a number of in-depth interviews. So this study uses a mixed methodology in quantitative qualitative. After data from questionnaires, from focus groups, dialogue, and from the in-depth interviews, more data from the end of the term, like grades, satisfaction, dropout rates would be added. And then, this is something I'm still working on, have some results which validate my hypothesis. My hypothesis is that training novice online students does make a difference in their performance online. So that's the context for this proposal of the role. In this dissertation, two main things are solved. One is to put forward this role of the online learner, and secondly is to have this empirical study so as to see what the effect is on online, new online students in my university. We're talking about 1,000 students as the sample, and we're talking about over 800 valid pre-treatment questionnaires and over 500 valid post-treatment questionnaires responded. Right? So that was the context. And the role of this of the online learner comes from changes in the way online learning agents perform their role in our informational society. From a post-industrial society, we're gradually going into an informational society, and expectations, conditions, demands from citizens, from the public opinion, from everybody, are changing. So we're going to a different role, not only on the part of the learner, but also and connected on the part of the instructor or professor. And obviously, things are changing, and things cannot be the same when students in this day and age, in online settings, are expected to be more proactive, more responsible, more involved than in the past, when they have a lot of freedom to use and to go about, which involves at the same time more responsibility. So it's not just freedom, it's also the responsibility going with it, where learning is supposed to be more collaborative than competitive, where communication and relationship is much more important than before, and learning online cannot really go about without it. We're talking about a new role because now there are more opportunities for autonomy and for own learning in all aspects, and that is expected. It's not just their online table kind of theoretical proposal, it's reality in our online learning. Differently to former on-site face-to-face contexts, learning skills are not related to what happens in class and in relation to a teacher-centered education. They mostly relate to informational skills. So all that freedom, all that proactive attitude expected and autonomy fostered and encouraged goes hand in hand with informational skills whereby students are supposed to be able to search, select, produce, and disseminate information and knowledge. And also, at the last point in this summary of table, learning or education is not restricted so much to fixed period in life as it was before. And now, for everybody, it's a question of lifelong learning differently to the past. So we will set the role of the online learner in this kind of changing expectations and changing reality in learning in the 21st century. As I see it, there's no structured, comprehensive body of knowledge that accounts for the role of the online learner as such. It's curious to know, to see how the student is in the center of every design, every platform, every online venture, but more often than not, he or she is at the bottom of our priorities, at the bottom of finance, at the bottom of budget, at the bottom of many things. And I think there's a lot of need for studying on the online learner and also on a theory on the role of the online learner. If anything, this would become a kind of framework for research and also contribute to the general theory of online education. On my part, I think such a theory would contribute to high quality courses, to stronger practice, and also to foster a sense of belonging to the mainstream of research and e-learning. With this theory, we would explain online learners' performance from the learner's viewpoint. And I think that's quite interesting. We would contribute to understand all the process involved. And it would also have a strong applied stand in terms that online learners would explicitly know about their role and have it as a kind of kind of reference for their future online. In fact, I'm talking about theory and application and everything here, but I'm thinking that more often than not, we push our students to the water with little or no preparation at all, expecting them to get to the end of the pool efficiently, without drowning, and in good time, listening to us from the side of the pool. And I think we can all understand this example. Obviously, you can't learn how to swim out of theory. You've got to taste the water. You've got to get wet, right? You have to plunge into it. But at least some kind of guidelines preparation beforehand saying, look, you're going to find this. Look, you should do that. Look, you think you'll get drowned, but you won't. You just stay afloat, you just look at me, it's interesting. So the theory on the role of the online learner has this kind of general aim. So this theory, I think, is flexible enough to cater for changing variations and aspects in different learning contexts, modes, and with different ages. Because it's not here explicitly, it would be in my dissertation. I can't imagine, I don't see this role of the online learner separate from the role of the online tutor, the role of an online instructor. They both go hand by hand, and one needs the other, as much as, for example, there could not be a complete role of learner fulfilled without a similar role of the online user fulfilled in terms of allowing all these conditions, fostering everything we've seen before, right? Because no matter how much technology we would have, if the teaching is responsive, teacher-centered, and it's not fostering communication and relationship and collaboration, then we won't have this kind of goal fulfilled by students. So these are some characteristics and features of the role. For example, it's explanatory in the sense that both students and instructors become aware of the required skills and competencies for learning online. It's comprehensive, in my opinion, because it can cater for cohort settings, continuous education, and both or even for vended or mixed on-site online settings. In fact, I see this theory as relevant for 3D environment still. It would have to be adapted a little bit, but most of it, as you'll see later in the model, this is the model I put forward. I think it would still be valid for this kind of environment. The only thing is that obviously the operational competencies would have to be somewhat different for a 3D environment, right? But as to cognitive, communicative, collaborative, metacognitive or strategic, and even academic competencies, the model seems to be valid, right? And I'm embarrassing myself a little bit. It's good that you taste a little bit of those answers. Right. Inclusive also in the sense that all kinds of learners can benefit from this role of the online learner as in playing in units. Not just for novice online learners, also for more seasoned learners who will find interesting concepts there that they were not aware before. Why? Because they learn the hard way. They learn through trial and error. Not going to formalize content as I'm proposing now. Longitudinal in the sense that it is a reference a long time. Cross-sectional because it's relevant to many disciplines. It's cross-curricular. It's transversal, we would say. Relevant to all courses or subject matters across the board when delivered or taken online. Dynamic because it can account for changes of performance due to time or students' expertise and preferences. We'll see that in a moment. And applicable because it helps students to actually learn about their role, right? And also instructors or tutors in this post here. Now, This role, as I see it, obviously hasn't come from nowhere. There are some influences, and I can see that, I don't know whether that's that good or that bad, but I haven't found many things done on the online learner, but the things I found are pretty fine. David Birch's list of competencies for learning online is probably the core basis for this role. It's just a list of competencies and skills that gave me the idea for this. It's a good contribution, really. Obviously, the role of the online learner is not that much different from any other professional or vital roles in life. So, descriptions of professional roles in firms in the professional world are useful to those who are learning the role in a formalized way, and so such a description would be good for our students too. And also, for the first time we see the role of the online learner acknowledged in the community of inquiry theoretical constructs that developed by Randy Harrison and Marty Friedland. You know them and you know this concept. These three dimensions, cognitive presence, teaching presence, and social presence. And it's interesting that in this community of inquiry theoretical framework, a process of role adjustment is acknowledged, and also the existence of a new role for the online learner in this online medium. Right, as I understand it, a role is a set of expected actions and observable behavior for humans to internalize and apply in any given situation or for any given task. Interesting about the role is that sometimes we learn it through imitation and modeling, and sometimes we learn it in a more formalized way. Some of them are learned along life and we quite don't get to know anything about it in all our lives, even though we're learning about it. And others have a more formalized existence, presentation, we learn about it and then we practice it, we use it. For me, the role of the online learner is a group of competencies that the online learner becomes proficient a long time, just as he or she needs, and to the extent that he or she needs. So they can be attained, any competence can be attained to a certain degree. It's not black and white, on, off, right? And the set of competencies that a online learner is expected to show, to manifest when learning online, and what can he expect from others, is what I define as the role of the online learner. Before going to the model here, I think we should have a look at the components of competence. As you know, competence is not something that the whole academic community and everyone agrees on that, and there can be different interpretations, different viewpoints. Now, the science here encompasses, includes a number of skills. The personal ability to apply those skills, but a competence is not just the number of skills. It's also, and very importantly, the integration of many other things that go with those skills and make the task done, or make the job done, or we can see in something manifestly visual and real that, yes, that person has done that, so that person is somewhat competent in this or that. And I'm talking about feelings, emotions, knowledge of the context, our personal traits and likings, our own ability, our own initiatives, our own previous knowledge, our goals. So, as an online learner performs online, he or she manifests being competent in a number of areas. And those areas, as I see them, are these. Operational, at the bottom. Cognitive. Communicative, collaborative. Metacognitive and academic. And if you see this bubble, place and size are relevant. They try to say something here. The operational competence is at the base because it's needed to do anything in the electronic environment, in a digital environment, and our operational skills and our operational competence are related to navigation, the use of software, to efficient use of ICT tools in the online setting is basic for us to learn and relate online. We don't need them in the physical world because we have a lot of experience in walking and going through doors and sitting in places where there are four walls, one blackboard, and a piece of desk, right? So in terms of online setting and the tools needed to communicate and relate and learn there, these are needed. Then, obviously there's a two-way or return relationship between this competence and the rest, and it's outside. Because once you pass through these operational competence and skills, then you go to the main core, the main framework, that's why it's in this kind of rectangle, are three core competencies that interrelate to one another. Obviously, students have to be as competent as possible in studying, in assimilating course content, in working academically, using your materials and passing courses and getting good grades. But that's not enough. They've also got to be competent in communication and collaboration with mates, with instructor, with tutor, Obviously, if we collaborate efficiently, it's because we can communicate efficiently with others. And the triangle, the core competencies are competed with what in my tutorial you see later, I told students to be strategic competencies in terms of attitudes, strategies, skills for self-direction and self-management, and monitoring one's progress in the online setting. And the last competence at the top is, of course, specific, a degree of program-related competence. If you know how specific to the course or program that student is doing. Outside of main framework, because these three are cross-curricular, so to speak, across the board, and this one is too, but it's not so central, and the academic competence is what we would say is more specific to what students are doing at the moment, related to the discipline he or she is in, related to the program he or she is in. And showing a little bit this plasticity or this flexibility of the model, I've got two more models to show you. It's the same model, but this time, what happens here? Why the operational competence is bigger than the rest? Why in the central framework of the model for the role of the online learner, the metacognitive competence is smaller than the other two components in the main framework? This could be a rhetorical question, or this could be a question put up to the to the colleagues who have kindly come today to the governing council room in Abad University. This would be a reflection or a snapshot of the model, of the role of the online learner at the beginning. Obviously, students are very much worried at the beginning about operational competence issues, about, we say in teacher talk, operational competence, but they will be worried about finding places in the environment, in their setting, knowing how to do this, knowing how to go to registration, knowing how to contact the tutor, where the materials, how do I use the email program, whatever. And this is time related from top, from bottom to top, right? But it's not just this one. They also, at the same time, get into grips on how to study in the environment, on where to find things, or, hey, there are more people like me here. And I'm reading them. I'm getting to know what they're doing and their problems are. So the cognitive competencies, cognitive and communication competencies are important too. But if the student at that initial stage thinking that much about how to monitor his or her progress, how well or badly he or she is doing, I don't think so. That's why I made it smaller in terms of size, so as to show the relevance there. Now, well into the course, the situation changes. There's more experience, there's more awareness of what's going on, and the operational skills and problems and things are passed, so to speak. They're still important. Most of us learning online will be passed to certain operational issues from time to time, but hey, studying, communicating becomes really essential, with the cognitive becoming more and more important, right? So I'm not going into more models. This would be some kind of a way for me to show you that this model can be adapted to the situation. It's not static, so to speak. And now comes the roadmap. I must say it's not as definitive as the rest, because I'm still working on my dissertation and on this. Some of these have to be verbalized better, have to be more accurate. But anyway, the idea shown here is that in every model, and particularly in our model of the world of the non learner, there's a relationship between the competencies, the skills, and the outputs. The competencies are seen here as main areas in our roadmap. We know we're in Alberta, so then we can find and move our way around. Not the same Union of Alberta that I'm being in Manitoba. I can appreciate the difference, right? Sorry for the easy example. Then we've got the skills, the things, the actual things that a student has to take into account one way or another in terms of knowledge, attitude, abilities, and the outputs as the real things, the real tasks that students perform on. Right? And I think our students and our instructors, or us as students, or us as tutors, need something like this. A breakdown of things. So this means that I'll be posting mails to the course forum. This means that I'll be able to enroll online. Very interesting. And this means that I'll be able to ask someone for support online. In communication, collaboration, and metacognitive skills, I've been able to find and suggest those much more than the rest. For example, let's look at metacognitive skills. In terms, I don't know if this will be the final result, but in terms of personal traits, some are needed. For example, tolerance to other people's opinions, resilience to failure, disappointment, and uncertainty. It will be needed, and students have to be aware that this will happen and that they will need it. Then the second group, strategies for learning online. Metacognitive strategies and actions. And most importantly, reflection and self-awareness. I'd like to be able to come up with a simpler, more graphic, more attractive roadmap, still having the main skills and the main outputs for everyone to see. So, by all means, criticize, suggest, ask. Right, we've come to the end, and I'm going to show you the tutorial I produced for this part. I'm going to scroll until the end. This part of the project experiment. This is the tutorial on the rollout here, and it was only shown to students in classroom 1. So that's out of questionnaires, out of focus groups questions, and out of in-depth interviews, I could have a feel or data as to, not feel or data, not data, and feelings and impressions as to whether those students who had done the tutorial were thinking, expressing, doing things differently compared to those who didn't know about it. Always taking into account the experience element that is going to be taken into account. Anyway. This is the tutorial students were given access. The tutorial that they were told they could do in 4 hours dedication. Some said that it took them 10 hours. Some said, oh no, it took me 2 hours. Anyway, it's not a subject. It's not something which is heavy, tapping, or difficult to do. In fact, after the pilot of this research, the majority of students say that nothing is missing and nothing should be added. They liked it as it was. And they found the activities to be very useful for themselves. So I'm quite happy with it. And in fact, when my presentation is presented and if you say approved, anyway, when I'm a happier man with my PhD next September or so, this, what you can see here, demographics and not simpler. I like the less small thing, but in a more adequate way, will be provided to my university and beyond my students before they actually enroll in any subject. We have a setup of student support which is quite extensive. Still, I think it can be improved. I think it's everyone else or everybody else, everyone else, I suppose. But the good thing is that we have what we call tutorial classrooms. And in those classrooms, students go and see what the methodology is, they look at materials, they know how to go about our university, and they will know about their role with this kind of digital online accessible material. And in this classroom they have a tutor who helps them out, and only after they spend some time teaching in that classroom they actually enroll in their degree or in their course. So this was presented to students, and as you can see, this is an older version of the model, and perhaps it's newer than the present one that you've seen, but I think the present one works more effectively than this one. It's just five areas there. Although, as you can see, the main idea of operational... I didn't realize there's not the one in this version for the moment. This is the role competencies. I suppose your French or your Italian or even your Spanish will help you out with this one. This is the operational competence at the bottom, cognitive, communicative, collaborative, the metacognitive here, and the academic one. You can see this has been transferred to the second version of the model. In terms of the central core of three competencies across the board and the operational competence to be a basic one on which the rest stand. I provided two links other than the role itself for students to have a little introduction as to what it is. As you can see, there's not much text. Context, how important it is, the virtual student and the role of the online learner. We can go very quickly around it. It was specifically explained to students what it was education in the post-industrial world that students would have so near, and to what it's tending to be in our new informational society, right? The importance of the role of the online learner. And it begins with this sentence that I quite like for the beginning of this self-awareness process. Can anyone learn from me? And then students themselves see their traditional role and see their new role, which is what you saw in my presentation, well, in this presentation to you before you see that. And then I explain a little bit about the competencies, and they can go to the model itself. And then they can go about it. Students were instructed to read as much or as little as they wanted to, but they have to do the activities for each of the competencies. The student would click on any competence in the order they wanted to, and at the end of some concepts and content, they will go to the, what am I supposed to do now, section. And there, they have an activity to do. In this case, is reflect, write down the health channels and health connections they could have in their own critical environment. We'll see a couple of examples. Oh, you can see this one now. Can you?
Yes, that's the mark.
So if we go here to my health channels here, students have a template where they can write down what they saw important for them in their contents, and also where they can find technical help as an institution academic or others. So it's something that they're going to use after they did this little self-learning tutorial is over in their own learning. And going back to the model, illuminating taking a little longer. Did it open up anyway?
No.
Alright, sorry. Right, for eliminate attendance, you can see the template I was talking about, which is going to be used for student himself or herself. Now, going back to the model and to in the tutorial, you write it, that's it. Then, if we go to that, we can go, for example, to the metacognitive competence link. They're all the same. They're all the same structure. Contents on the left, a kind of content menu with different sections. In terms of metacognitive skills, sections are learning in a virtual learning environment and attitudes. And with this, learning, motivation, discipline, and resilience. And as you can see, let's go, for example, Aprende, right? This is a link to a YouTube presentation of many pictures of an online student. And then I wanted to show you, I think it's attitudes, right? In attitudes, I quote students, and this link goes to the piece of news or article or these 10 advice, pieces of advice to begin with your right foot and your right knee at the university. And then going to the last section for every section of this tutorial, there's the activity. And with this one, for example, I want to show you these Dell Consensus Strategics, 10 strategic pieces of advice. And students are told that a friend of theirs is going to begin learning online, and he or she asks you for advice. So you're going to write here, and on this template, my 10 pieces of advice to an online learner, right? And this comes out of, is it taken longer than 1 minute to open?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, in any case, you see when it opens up that it's a blank list of 10 items where the student is supposed to write down his or her own views or advice to these imaginary friends. This comes from a list they have later. It's not looking at the advice as a piece of advice and then writing their own. No, no, no. Students are asked to write their own advice as they think, as they see from the content in the tutorial or from their limited experience, it doesn't matter. And then they check it out they check it out against this list of 10 possible pieces of advice, although others could be included too. Motivation, being proactive and autonomous, studying and take part, organize and plan oneself, quality time, choose your best quality time along the day and during the week to study and to connect. Be resilient, in other words, be capable of coming back from problems and from failures against difficulties. Plan B always applies. Be disciplined, self-discipline. Know about the course and get familiar with the way it works. And do ask for help if you need it. So at the end of tutorial, the student had a number of documents that were directly relevant to his or her performance online. And that is something that obviously improved is going to be provided to our students in the university. So with this, I conclude it, and I'll be delighted to have your comments, questions, observations, ideas, suggestions, criticism, or you want to impart me a copy or something, I'll be happy to. Thank you very much. If no one has a question, I can ask a question to everybody. No problem. How much do you think someone here in Athabasca Central and someone at a distance to illuminate, how much do you think this could be applicable or of benefit to your students, if that is the case? Or do you see any changes to be made or anything?
Hi.
Thank you. Hi.
Can I talk? I can't answer your questions, Federico, but can I ask you some questions about your work?
Absolutely. Yes,
okay. About a number of things just I could talk about just to start the conversation. Okay. I noticed that you didn't use the term constructivism. Well, you didn't address constructivist, the constructive approach by name, although what you're talking about is definitely constructivism, unless I missed it in the other language, sorry. Or missed it in small print, sorry.
No.
But I didn't hear you say it. And I guess my first question would be why didn't you say it outright? Because obviously we're talking about a constructivist model.
Right, okay. You're right, I didn't say it. So I mean, there was not a lost in translation or something. Only because I wanted to be as brief as possible. And the truth is that you're right, it all stands on a concept of learning, which is social constructivist. And the whole idea of the initial model, the whole idea of students being competent and showing competence in communication and collaboration is sustained on that. So definitely in the presentation or if you have larger presentation, definitely that should have to be included as a kind of condition or as a kind of essential feature of this concept of the role in the language.
I would certainly have it built into your theoretical framework, very explicitly. Back in 1996, when computer media communication was just new, and was in fact known as CNC. Zane Burge and Maury Collins did a model, which you're probably familiar with, a fairly basic model outlining instructional roles. And it's, I don't think it's surprising that the beginning of the examination of what online learning was all about, once it got past looking at technology, which was the first wow factor, I had to move by then, we started looking at instructional roles, and they outlined, you know, a very simple four-piece model to account for instructional roles. And the four instructional roles that they saw were the teaching role, the social role, the technical role, and the management role. And I see basically in your model that you are attending to the same roles. I mean, we use different words and we chopped up the pie a bit differently. And everybody who makes the model chops the pie a bit differently. So I'm wondering, did you look at Collins and Burge's work? Did you consider that as a starting point, or did you make a conscious adaptation? If you haven't looked at their work, I would suggest that you just, which is one of those things that you might want to include when you're building the framework.
Thank you, Diane. Yes, you're right. Same Burge's articles definitely, other than David Burge, talk about the role explicitly, the role of the learner. Well, no, I didn't know this instructional role CNC model. I'm very thankful that you pointed it out to me because definitely approaching me. It's either that I knew something similar or different, but they've done it before. And you're right, in one way or another, all these roles and all these aspects of learning online have to be present. And when I'm trying to do as a new thing here is not pointing out those competencies or those skills or those aspects of learning online, of using the social, the technical, and the management. What I'm trying to do here is to cook a pie, as you were saying, cook a pie that it explicitly says, this is for students. This has been cooked for students, thinking on students, and you're going to get it half right, so to speak, right? So that they find it more enticing, more appetizing. And even though on the shelf there'll be other models, former models, different models, this, I would like to think that this is the one for students, because it takes the best of every model in a way to suit the student's taste or the student's needs. That's what's behind it.
Yeah, that'll be great. That'll be great to have something dedicated to students. And the model that I'm talking about, and there's about four other models between them and you, is more directed to instruction, but as you pointed out earlier, it's the mirror image, instruction from learning, right? I mean, they're symbiotic, they have at the same time, they're both dependent on each other. I have another couple of points if there's no one else who wants to get in right now.
Yeah.
I think one of the things you should also be thinking about, Federico, is the notion of identity online. There's a huge, well, not a huge literature, but there isn't literature that involves the actual formation of an online identity, which sits apart from the things that you do in a functional way. It comes out of the work of Goffman, who was the identity guy, who started in 1959. Now, obviously, in 1959, we didn't have anything even close to online learning. So Goffman's theories of identity are not based on online learning, but they have been adapted to work in the online venue. And it's really interesting because people do adopt a persona online, and this is very different from, say, taking on an avatar and doing something in a game sequence or a game venue, but people need to protect themselves and take care of their own sense of well-being online, because as your model points out, sometimes things don't go well, and sometimes you have to be resilient, and sometimes quite frankly, you get bashed up online by rude people in your classroom, even when you're the teacher. So there's this identity factor that you would work in there somewhere, and the way you have your model constructed, it would probably end up being a part of your metacognitive sense, because it's enveloping, right? It's bigger, but that's for you to worry about. Another thing that I would comment on is that you didn't separate the academic functioning from the administrative functioning of the student. And this comes back to the notion, again, of the bigger approach of identity, because students take on a different identity when they're students from when they're not students, even within an academy. Like if a student is dealing with the registrar's office, they're dealing with the registrar's office in a different capacity than they're dealing with an instructor in a learning capacity. They will be a different person. With a library, they will be a different person. So when you're looking at their ability to, for example, register online or do online functioning, it will probably be framed differently or end up looking different than the way that they would perform similar technical functions within the framework of the learning environment. So somewhere in your model, you might want to attend to that. And actually, that could all spring out of the attention that you pay to the formation of their identity, because that's somewhat part and parcel of that.
I'd like to. All right. Thank you. I'd like to point out two things of what you said, and also to acknowledge Marty's comment on identity, issues of life by Collier, 2001. Right. Okay. I can see that you've gone past the scope of things that I've looked at, because you pointed out this identity to me, right, and this framing of academic issues differently being an online student, right? And actually, I haven't included that in my reflection on the role. And in fact, you're dead right, because in my university, they would really look at me kind of badly if I left out the identity issues or the identity information in my theoretical proposal, because there's a strong another. I mean, we get on very well. There's a group of professors dealing with identity online, identity ethnographical kind of analysis of, and I'm sure they would have to, they would like to say a few things about this role.
And if Marty's online, I guess she's online. Hi, Marty. She did that work recently that you alluded to with Randy, I think, on the evolution of student roles and changing student roles, which is another role adjustment, that's right, and which is another iteration, another take on that larger sense of how the student creates identity online. There's a whole literature about students creating an identity online, which is self-sustaining and finding the identity to present themselves in the best possible light so that you look good, basically, to your other students who may know you personally and may know that you don't look good, so to speak. I don't mean physically. Yeah. So we try to create a persona online that shows you in the best light, and that affects what you do and some of the decisions that you make.
You're right, because in fact, when reflecting on any role, you can see that there's always an identity connected to that role. In life, whatever it is, our role, professional, five roles, whatever, there's an identity attached to it.
The other guy who did work on that area, his name is Mark Schneider. It comes again, it's older work. It's pretty online, but I think the approaches and the philosophy for us, I think it's worked on in the early 90s, SNIDR.
Thank you. Is there anything online that anyone would like to say or contribute to? Right, one person.
And my question is just, what is the age range of students that you were working with, and how does that play into the role model itself?
The age we're talking about in this quasi experiment in participation research, and the first recipients or the first kind of students I thought in dealing with the role are those adult online learners, let's say in the late 30s up, right? However, I would say that this taking up the role, these role adjustments with learning online goes across all ages. Because even if we, framing it in kind of modern talk, we would say the students who give time is aimed at our digital interests, so to speak. But even if digital natives or students who are younger than the 30s, the 20s, or even 30s, I think this could be applicable and could be relevant, right? Because it takes more, as we know, it takes more than technological skills. And it takes some self-direction. And good self-direction in cognitive skills, community aesthetics, and that goes through every student. In fact, in the long run, after my dissertation is ending, what I'd like to do is to explore a way to apply this or the community days or tuition research on this at a level in what we have secondary schools in Poland, right? Because I don't know here, but in your auditorium, top to bottom, online is going from top to bottom, and you will eventually reach secondary schools much more than it is reaching now. Right? I don't know whether this is your question. Right, yes. Yeah.
The United States, sorry, I guess it's the Department of Education, just put out a really recent report, Federico, 2009, on the effects of online learning or the ability to or how to or whatever, right through K-12 and on up. It's a huge report. Also, I wanted to mention, just when you started off, the whole notion of looking at how we learn is, I think, a phenomenon that's being uncovered by peeling back an onion.
as we get more involved with online learning, because remember the relationship was in the classroom, we're not really thankful what we're doing there, right? We just went and we did whatever they told you to do. And now we are pulling it apart in every which way, which is great. I love that, and I think it's really neat. But there's also a recent publication, and I'll send you the link, some kind of an online journal, it's not gone for higher education, that talks about that very aspect of this very drilled down look at exactly what goes on and why we do it and what we find and the fact that we turned this lens on ourselves in a really interesting way that just wasn't there before. And of course asking in big picture, why is that? Why do we have this need to know now what happens in the teaching learning dynamic just because we can't see each other in the classroom? I love that study, so it's really neat that you're working on it.
Well, thank you, Abby, for having me today. And in fact, I don't know if this is customary in your lunch session, but before we all leave, I'd like to ask you something here, Harold, Diane, all the rest here in Athabasca, and the ones at a distance, if you could just say or tell me that anything, is there anything you'd like to think of it in the role of the online learning as a concept that I put forward? Is there anything you think has caught your attention, for example? Is there anything like that? And I would appreciate that very much.
Actually, one thing I really see is that we're trying to drop the old attitude and emotion into this, not just only I like to see that as the students of people are learning. And maybe my English on the learning journey. Because the more science are just starting to tell us a little bit more about that. And yeah, so that's my view. So I like to see that as a social review. What I really like was the list of 10 suggestions that you have students make for hypothetical friend of theirs who would be registering online. I thought that was a brilliant exercise for students to have to think hard about how they would identify and rank these systematic characteristics. And in doing so, for someone else, they also realize for themselves that I too need to apply these strategies to my online experience. I really did like that.
Thank you.
The second item is also in policy as well. I just make them reflect on how we prepare our students as well. We have students coming into a master's online exam that we have not done any online courses before. And they don't have to. They're just launched in there. So most of when we develop courses, they're all about the content. Or we'll just do a discussion, or we'll just have the card in there, or they can use it. And we go out, well, when we develop something, we go out assumption that, oh, we'll just pick it up and not identify what emotional, how to prepare to be an online learner, not be what they do. So, yeah, that would definitely let you know if you're in the moment that I think we do need to prepare our students. At the master's, we seem to just that they have a lot of skills. So it depends on what they have, or even giving them the tools to get there.
Just one thing. Thank you everybody for the moment. I'd like to say that I agree with you. The students, even though they're new to online learning, they have skills, they have knowledge. And it's only a question for us or our government to help them to put all that in a coherent way so that they realize that they have most of that. And the role of the online learning tutorial or any formalized training on that can help to that.
Just to pick up on what Jody said, and it's very interesting. Some of the American colleges are working with the screening systems now. to do for students through a system of self-appraisal and appraisal and even training platforms to find out whether they're suitable learners to be successful. They're looking at the success statistics, and of course by success they're looking at completion, so there's a whole discussion right there. But I find this interesting because imagine if someone took exercise before we started going into a classroom and sitting in a desk to determine whether they were suitable to do that. Like, how long can you sit? How much light do you need? Can you work under the fluorescent lights? Do you want to look at that blackboard for 4 hours a day? How do you feel about chalk? You know, that kind of stuff, we never did that. And it's just a part of the evolution of where we're getting to, as again, peeling back the onion to look at all these details. So there's a huge debate about the need for this, the wisdom of this, the morality of this, and then exactly how it should be done.
I would need some closure and flushing criteria, but I think it's just...
Oh, sorry. I think just included as a criteria of selection, but it would be nice to have some tools that when we are thinking about going into groups to just reflect. I think reflection is powerful. And if we can start reflecting and even investigating a little bit about what this environment is like. But I wouldn't think of it as a selection criteria. I think students have the
capacity to help to develop, right? Just give them some games, get there a little faster, instead of being overwhelmed in a first course and now being intimidated to continue the program. I mean, that's pretty important. I'd like to emphasize on the fear and what you're saying. Probably the role of the learner or any kind of reflection, any kind of extra support we can give to our students, even I don't think that Vasco University or Universidad de Cataluña are the places where support has to be greatly implemented. I'm sure there are many other places in online learning world that don't have as much or half as much as support we provide. But anyway, we don't have to look at it, we have to look at ourselves, and we can always help our students more, and we should help them more. So anyway, things like this that I'm proposing, or any other thing, if they help to improve the quality of what we do with our students, then I think that's the line, because we're not going to differentiate ourselves, or we're not going to make students better learning experiences by adding more technology. It's these kind of things, it's this reflection, it's for them to know that there is like someone behind them. And that, I think, in a more and more informational society is going to be the key difference for people in those fields.
One more comment. Looking at your model, though, what I really did appreciate was the insight behind changing the sizes of the different categories, where students, coming to their course with a certain amount of time in the evening or weekend or whatever, to dedicate to their studies may initially feel quite frustrated that they're not getting anything done because they're grappling with the technology or trying to figure out how to do this or how to do that, and just to acknowledge the kinds of stress that students have that can be not even related to the content that they're learning. And once they overcome that, they're able to move on to, other kinds of activities where they may also be experiencing stress, but it's more creative than it is negative, and actually accomplish more in a amount of time. So just, I guess, keeping in mind that every amount of time the new student has to work on a portion of the course, how much of it is actually engaging in learning programs. And we need to be mindful of what we're asking of students.
Absolutely, and that's why you can see in the model, in the tutorial, the section on resilience, this was by any difference what the students mostly appreciated in the tutorial. Most of them liked the metacognitive strategic competence explanation. skills to help them, and they were not so aware of that. It gave them some kind of a structured organization as to, alright, so I can monitor my time like this, alright, so I can actually organize my time better. And also this resilience concept, and showing things like this to students, it's so simple, yet it's so useful to them. This quote, for example, from a real student. The first year, I thought I couldn't make it. Just reading and listening things like this, as when you begin online, then makes a lot of difference, I think.
Yes.
Emotions, absolutely. Emotions, yeah. And feelings. And not just operational skills or content. Well, yes, you're right. I mean, I'm glad to see that this is reflected in the tutorial and somehow in the model. And I only hope to make it more complete, more comprehensive, thanks to your comments and whatever you want to tell me about it in the future. So if there's anything, from the people in Calgary or Edmonton, this is it. Thank you very much. It's been enthralling to me and a wonderful experience to be able to see you at the last minute. Thank you.